We are going to be talking first with Sharon Drew Morgan, who has written a book called Dirty Little Secrets. And actually, this might be the most profitable 15 minutes we've ever had on the show, because she is going to tell us some of the little secrets of selling more effectively and actually re-engineering the whole selling process so that you can close more business and make more money and all those good things. Sharon, are you with us? Are you here? Sharon Drew? Ooh, I did it. Man, right out of the gate, I screwed up the whole thing.
Can we start over?
No, okay. Good morning, Sharon Drew. Sorry about that.
Good morning, Eric. Okay.
So first of all, you
know that I'm just a pain in the ass about my name. That's all.
It's okay. I just psyched myself out and I ruined the whole thing. But that's okay. So getting back into it, let's just pretend that didn't happen. Dirty Little Secrets. You have a completely different approach to selling. Basically, you're telling us that the way that we sell is fundamentally flawed, and that if we want to close business, or close more business, that there are some different approaches that we can take to actually make that happen.
Okay.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes, and I want to correct it just a little bit.
Please.
Because it's not that sales is flawed. It's just incomplete.
Okay.
And we're pretty good as sellers. We understand need, and we understand our solution, and we care, and we're professionals, and we present professionally. The problem is that the sales model itself doesn't allow us to get in with the buyer in those behind-the-scenes issues that they manage privately. So it's not there when your prospect is talking to his or her boss, or when the tech team wants to take over, or when the old vendor is called. We're just not there.
Mm-hmm.
And sales actually treats the buyer's problem as if it were an isolated event and doesn't recognize that there's a whole system of people and policies and rules and history that surround the identified problem and actually influence and bias the way the buyers choose to resolve it. So we sit and we wait while buyers do whatever it is they do, and we really have no idea because we're outsiders and we're not there with them. And then they come back or they don't. And the problem is that 90% of them don't. So we've wasted all this time on either inappropriate prospects or prospects that we could have closed. I had a situation a couple of weeks ago in Scotland where I was doing some work with a client, and the students wanted to hear me do a call, and they arranged for me to call a one-year prospect who had just told them no, that they weren't going to buy the product, after my client had made 3 field visits, had given them 3 to 4 trials over the course of a year, and then they ended up saying no. So everyone agreed that I could call and say hi, and I was positioned as a trainee. So I called up and I said, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to sound stupid. They said, no, don't worry. And I said, it must have been really hard for you to not buy after a year's trial when you must have loved the product and then couldn't buy it. And she said, oh, you're right. She said, but the HR department wasn't working with us. By the way, I had a side bet with the sales manager that the L&D department was not the only buying decision group. And he said, oh, I've been talking with them for a year, and they're the only people that showed up. And so we bet 5 quid. Of course, I won. I wanted to bet 50. He said, no, 5. So anyway, the prospect said, oh, yeah, we're having trouble with the HR department, and we're not getting along with them. And frankly, we haven't been able to buy a lot of stuff we wanted to buy, but they have a new guy, and we're not getting along. And I said, so it sounds like that you've put your relationship issues in front of the needs of your staff and are holding back on supporting excellence because you can't manage the personal issues. And I call that a presumptive summary in my buying decision process. And the woman was silent for a minute. She said, you're absolutely right, and it's just two egos fighting, and we're harming our folks. And I said, well, it happens all the time. Don't feel bad about it. I said, so what would need to happen for you to be ready, willing, and able to figure out how to work with HR just in case there's anything new you want to add that you haven't been able to? And so she said, oh, I'll sit down with my colleagues and we'll figure out how to approach it. I really appreciate that. That was basically the end of the call until 15 minutes later. She wrote an email to the sales director, my client, and said, can you have her give us a list of her great questions so we know how to approach the HR department? I love the way she approached us. A week later, they bought.
So after – well, that's a terrific story. Now, as a salesperson or as a business owner, when you develop a relationship with a client, and obviously after a year for you to be able to call these people and get this kind of information, there was a good relationship there. How do you, as a solutions provider, seller, whatever, how do you leverage those relationships and when a client confides in you or a prospect confides in you with some inside information, how do you go about leveraging that in a way that isn't going to put them in an awkward position?
Well, so hang on a second. You're using words that I don't use at all. You said get information, confides, and inside information. What I'm doing is wholly different than sales.
Mm-hmm.
So let me go back a minute. When you the issues that you just brought up, getting information, confiding, and even your question, is all because the sales model pushes against this private stuff that buyers do and then sits on the outside waiting. So there's this assumption in the sales arena that if we get the right data, if we have confidence, if the buyers like us, that will sell. The problem is we're only selling a maximum of 7% from first prospecting call to close. So we're doing this because the sales model is broken. Using the buying facilitation model, nothing that you said happens.
Okay.
What we do is we act as if we're the GPS system and the buyer is the driver and the problem is the car and the journey, and then the solution is the wedding you're getting to. So they're different events. Each one requires different skills. As a GPS, I'm just saying left, right, left, right. So I'm showing them where they have to be internally to make the decisions that they need to make to move forward.
So you're more empowering them.
You know what? They're going to do it anyway.
True. But you're helping them.
With me or without me.
But you're.
And here is a group, and this happens all the time, that didn't know how to do it. So they didn't do it. So they didn't buy. It had nothing to do with my solution. It had nothing to do with their need. It had to do with some crazy stuff going on that nobody was managing. And that's what happens inside the buyer. One of my dirty little secrets is that buyers don't understand their whole journey on their route to excellence either. Just like you don't know the whole journey you're going to take if you're going to move. You kind of know that you have to pack and that you have to hire a van, but you don't know all the problems with the truck and the tire. And then you don't know all those problems because you haven't taken the journey yet. So what I have developed is a different toolkit. It is not sales. It's like a GPS system. It actually leads the buyer sequentially, and I've designed my Dirty Little Secrets book. I talk about the sequence of all these decisions and how they get made and what happens with change internally and how the change bits internally fight each other and function and dysfunction work together in order for change to happen. It's a change management process they have to do internally. So the buyer goes through all these decisions, and then they come up with what they have to manage, and then they get buy-in for a solution. Until or unless they do that, they're not buying anything. It doesn't matter how great my product is. It doesn't matter what I understand. I was working with Unisys years ago, and there was they had won a deal to, for a $30 million electronic banking solution. This was many years ago. And they called me one day, and from one of the world's largest banks. And they called me and they said, we won the deal. They have the money in the account. It's 2 years in. It has cost them $1 billion, with a B, $1 billion to not implement this. And we've been seeing him every month for beer, and we're doing little things. What's going on? So they set up an appointment with me, and this is a president of one of the world's largest banks. This is a crazy story I'm going to tell you. And in our 12-minute conversation where I used the buying facilitation model, he discovered that he had a three-year-old union guy problem with the ex-CEO who they were having legal issues with, and so he didn't want to go in and fix the problem. And he had pushed it off to the side of his head, and he was fixing everything else and didn't want to get to this problem. Now, this is a crazy problem. This is the CEO of one of the world's largest banks who spent $1 billion on an unconscious problem that he didn't resolve. Crazy story. It's true. I was actually telling this story last year at a talk I gave in the UK, and this little guy up front says, a good salesperson would have known that. Well, of course, knowing that wouldn't have resolved the problem. But from the back of the room stood up one of the senior partners on the Unisys team, and he says, oh, contraire. He says, I was one of the senior partners, and there were five of us, and we were really smart guys, and there was no way to get from here to there. So what's going on internally with the buyer, with their internal politics and their relationship issues and their histories of initiatives and partner issues and old vendors? Sales doesn't manage that, but the buyer has to. So I have come up with a new model to give sellers a wholly different skill set that's not sales. And once they lead the buyer through all these internal decision issues, then you use sales. Then you gather needs. Then you discuss solution and how it works. But in the meantime, we've put you, or you've put yourself, on the buying decision team, so you're helping the buyer make the decisions they need to make and leading them through. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Obviously, one of the holes in the whole process is that you don't get to be there as if you are a salesperson, if you are trying to close business, you don't get to be in the room when the decision is made. But you're giving us a different perspective that says, well, wait, why aren't you in the room? So I think it makes a lot of sense.
But we can't be in the room. We can't be in the room when there's these unconscious decisions that aren't made. We can't be in the room when learning and development is not talking to HR. We can't be in the room when the tech team says, I want to do this. We're just not part of the private intern. We're not part of their system. We're still outsiders.
If I can change gears for just a quick
sure.
minute. You told me something really interesting on the phone the other day, which was that we should stop writing proposals. Explain.
Okay. So why do buyers make proposals? They do that because they don't know how to decide. Right? If you knew exactly what you wanted, who you wanted, and how much you were going to spend and decided that with them, you wouldn't have to write a proposal. Now, government agencies decide because they must by law. But everyone else writes a proposal because they're gathering data on how to make a decision. They never take the cheapest one. They don't. So how do they choose, and what criteria do they use? We never know. So just like doing a pitch, we're on the outside pushing in, hoping we're going to get chosen and hoping we're going to say the right thing, when not only do we not know their criteria, to be truthful, when they start the proposal, RFP process, they don't know all their criteria either. They know what the end result should look like, although I'll tell you that changes once the whole buying decision team gets together to discuss things. Once you're on the buying decision team, there's no reason for the buyer to write a proposal. I just had a client who was doing four visits over the course of a year and meetings. I told him he would never have to do meetings again, and he thought that was hilarious. He said, we spent $1 million to create this, and we all use this, and that's what we do, and that's how we sell. So after the training, They went from a 1 year and 3 or 4 presentation close to a 3 week, 3 call, no visit close. The time it takes buyers to come up with their own answer is the length of the sales cycle. They would rather do it quicker. They don't know how. They don't care whether they spend more or less. They don't want to buy anything. They want to resolve a business problem. So if you're on their decision team and you're helping them resolve all the internal issues, they just automatically choose you, and they no longer need a proposal because they've already made their choice. It's not a competition for them unless it has to be, unless everything looks the same. When one thing is clearly different and everything else looks the same, they choose the one thing that's best for them.
That makes a whole lot of sense, and it's definitely a completely different perspective than obviously we're used to, because the default is hey, we're going to write a proposal, we're going to we shook hands, we sat down, we did our song and dance, and now I'm going to send you a piece of paper with some numbers on it.
You know what the problem is? The problem is that because the sales model only manages the solution placement piece of the buyer's buying decision, salespeople have been on the outside trying to get in, pushing to get in, fighting to get in. Not only is there no way directly in using sales, but even when they're on the buying decision team, I'm on the buying decision team with one of the world's largest banks trying to create a new solution, and I know that the tech team, as soon as we're all off the phone together, I know that the tech team is doing everything they can to create this because it sounds like fun, and they'd rather do it than have me. I know that because I know when I get the conversations, and they all include me on these conference calls, I can tell that they've moved forward with the tech team already. And I have to say, so I hear, Joe, that you're already looking at doing this piece of the buying decision process and your technology. How will you know when you've got the same thing I'm doing or might need additional support? In other words, you don't know what the hell you're doing, buddy. I didn't say that, but I said that. And then the tech guy said, oh, you're right, Sharon Drew. I don't know at all. We'll have to sit down and have a conversation. Maybe there are some parts that I can't do that I think I can do. So I have to move them back each time we have a call. But then when we do it, I have to start all over again. I'm not there. I'm on the buying decision team. I'm farther than other salespeople would be. But I'm not there with them. We can't be. We're not part of their company. Sales doesn't give us that toolkit. So what I've done is I've designed a different toolkit that sits on the front end, and then you do the sales. Then you figure out all the needs and how the product has to be placed and so forth. So by that time, most of the work's done.
Well, we are actually running out of time, Sharon Drew, but before we let you go, could we have a quick little nugget of free advice for our listeners?
Okay. If you enter each call not trying to sell something, but trying to serve, and with a question such as, how are you currently adding new sales skills to the ones you're currently offering your staff? So you're already teaching them how to look internal as to what they're doing so that they can see if it makes any sense to consider change. Stop entering a call trying to push your product because their system feels fine, even if it's a crazy system, it's their system. Stop trying to push in. Enter by serving and enter by helping them make their best decisions around change. Then you can sell.
Thank you so much, Sharon Drew. And where can our listeners get in touch with you?
First, go to dirtylittlesecretsbook.com. Take a look at the new book. And there's some free chapters and purchasing data. My blog, my daily blog, is SharonDrewMorgan.com. And my email address, my private email address, is sdm@austin.rr.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I've really enjoyed listening to all the stuff that you had to say.
Thank you. Thank you both.